Welcome to Behind the 90 with Nika. I am so excited for today's guest. Her name is Ayanna Harris. She is very special to me. And I'll go into a little more about who she is. But before we get started, I always like to explain what the 90 means. 90% of what we go through in life is about our past, and only 10% is about the present. So the 90% represents our story. So it's so very important to tap into people's stories. And so that's why we're here today, because I think it's so important for us to understand the 90%, which again represents a person's story. So the title for today's discussion, we had a part one to this, and it's titled Serving in Your Purpose. I'm always so interested to see and to hear how people have come to serve in the area in which they've been called to serve. And so I have, not only is she one of the senior therapists here at Nika Owens & Associates, she has her own practice as well, and she's a friend. And her name is Ayanna Harris, and I would just like to introduce her and welcome her to Behind the 90 with Nika podcast. Hi, Ayanna. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Nika. I'm happy to be here and still kind of can't believe you want little old me on your beautiful podcast, this new venture you're doing. And I'm so happy that you are doing something that is important to you. So whatever I can do to advance this effort for you, I'm happy to do.
Well, I appreciate that. I am honored because I don't take for granted. You are a busy person. Like I said, you own your own mental health. You own your own practice. Yeah. You're a mental health professional.
Yeah.
And I have had it has been such an honor to work with you. Mm-hmm. Ayanna is the type of person who is very consistent in who she is. It's like, how can I describe it? She's very consistent in being kind, being resourceful, just a breath of fresh air in terms of her knowledge. I often like to say you are quick on your feet. You are. When a question is asked of you, I'm always amazed at how good you are with lining up your words together. And I'm always so impressed. And I'm like, if you weren't my friend, I would ask you to be my therapist. because you are so insightful. I like, like when we have like supervision, when we actually have case conceptualization, I always like the feedback that I get from you. Because as therapists, we have to kind of, support each other in those efforts just so that we're doing the best that we can do for our clients. So I want to ask you this. When we talk about serving in your purpose,
yes.
Again, this is part two because I did one for myself. When you were growing up as a young child, you know, some people say, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. What did you say you wanted to
be? I didn't say I wanted to be a therapist.
You did not?
I never said that.
You didn't?
I don't even know if I knew then, depending on how far back I'm going, but if I am going back to really early years, no, I don't even think I'd ever even had exposure to this profession or even any of its, related cousins in the field, the social workers, the psychologists. I don't think I had any concept of that. I think probably my early career ambitions as I, progressed through my schooling as a middle schooler and high schooler and even early years of college, I really wanted to once upon a time have a career in broadcasting in some way. I wanted to be on television. I think my dream career, I think I said this one time. I don't know if I said this to you or anyone here, but I have shared with friends in the past. I used to imagine myself being a news anchor, and they said it too.
I can see
everybody I've ever said that to said, I could see you doing that. I think I used to envision myself anchoring like the 6 o'clock news or something like that. I don't know what it was that about that spoke to me, but I saw myself doing that. Now, interesting thing about wanting to do that is that I was never some outspoken kind of person. I was never one who just enjoyed being seen and being noticed and being front and center. I didn't really enjoy that just in a natural social way, but with a job, right? If it was my job and my training to do something like that, oh, I definitely felt like I could have done it and kind of knocked it out of the park. So
for sure. That hits when I said, you know, the way you communicate, the way you line your words up together, you command that attention.
Yeah.
And so when Ayana opens up her mouth, you know it's going to be something profound, because you don't talk to just be talking. That's just not who you are. You talk.
I do not.
But you, Ayana, is, if she's speaking, you know it's something well thought out. It's not, she ain't shooting from the hip. But you can shoot from the hip, though. You can.
I can.
But if it's something that someone is saying, hey, like I said, you can shoot from the hip. If it's something that you need to think about, you're not going to just answer to be answering. Mm-hmm. You're going to sit back.
Right.
You're going to process. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I admire about you.
Oh, thank you.
You sit back and you process. You don't make emotional decisions.
Thank you.
You're like,
so
let's
much.
Process this for a minute. So
well,
I need that.
That's a blessing and a curse, the thinking about what I'm going to say or do. And then, okay, you've thought about it enough. Are you going to do something?
Okay.
Are you going to say something? So there are times where that kind of gets to be in a little fix where, okay, you've thought about this long enough. You really need to do something.
So let's speak more to that then, because, so you're saying that there are times that you will belabor a point until you can't anymore. And it causes you to move a little slower with executing something. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe not belabor a point, but belabor a decision that needs to be made.
Okay.
I tend to, I just spend a lot of time thinking about all the pros, all the cons, all the things that I think are the limiting aspects of it. And those are the things that, you know, they freak me out. I get freaked out by those things. And so trying to work through everything that might be the barrier, but meanwhile, I haven't really executed, you know, my plan or my idea. And so, there's a benefit to thinking things through, especially when you're speaking to someone. But then when you have to make a decision and everything isn't necessarily perfect, but you do have to do something. And I've been there many times, and I'm probably at that point now. There are decisions I still have yet to make that I have not, you know, really pulled the trigger on. But because of my, you know, introverted nature, my cautious nature, I just think about it so long.
So is that something you feel like you need to check? You want to redefine a tad? Or are you happy with it?
Yeah, I would like to get beyond that. I really would, because as in my work, when I'm confronted with that, with a person, I'm like, that's me. I don't tell them that. I'm like, that's me. And you are me right now. I say, I validate that whatever the barriers they think are there are likely valid. Like it's probably true that whatever you think is a potential threat to this idea, it's probably true, but does that necessarily mean that you can't do this? There's not too many things that we're going to do that will be executed with no flaw or without coming across some sort of speed bump when doing it, or even some sort of, it may even be delayed, even if you're in the midst of getting it done, it may get delayed in some way. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And so I'm able to say that to them. But then I'm like, okay, well, Ayana, you know, there's that thing you've been needing to do, and you're waiting for all of the pieces to line up. And you kind of got to stop doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like you learned that? I'm just curious, since we're on the topic, where do you feel, were you always like that even as a kid?
Probably. I think so. It probably, when I think back to even being a high school, for instance, if there was a project to do, that's probably the most high stakes thing that you have going on at that age. There's no major decision I had to make at that point, but there's something I need to do, and I'm watching the clock run out and I'm feeling like, okay, am I ready? Do I have my outline prepared? Like I was supposed to have my outline prepared. Do I have all my resources here? Can I now sit down and write this paper? You just needed to sit down and start writing the paper. Yeah. You just needed to start doing it, start someplace. But I probably have always been like that to some degree. But like I said, at that time, there wasn't much more on the line other than a good grade in a class, a good grade on a project. Well, now the stakes are higher. Now it's what am I going to do with my life?
Yeah, you know? Good. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, why didn't you pursue a career? You said in journalism, right? Or news anchor.
So
why didn't you pursue that?
Why didn't I? I remember my first year of college. I attended a community college before I later transferred over to Western Michigan, where I finished my bachelor's degree. But I started out local college in Saginaw, and I took a Psych 101 course as a prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. So you went
Psych
in?
It was Psych 100 or 101, probably 101.
But you went in thinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going
News to anchor.
Communications, right?
Communications,
right, would have been my major at the time. Now I'm a freshman, so there's no real defined major at this point. Community college, you don't necessarily have to have your major identified. But I took, you know, my prerequisites, and one of them was a Psych 100 level course, and I started to learn about some of those fundamentals of the psychology field, and I was intrigued. Now, you know, that's not necessarily teaching us the delivery and the practice necessarily of therapy and counseling, but it is giving just that, is giving that introduction into the human mind and human development across time and different approaches. And I just became more and more intrigued by it. And I said, okay, well, maybe when I transfer, I'm going to change my major to psychology. And so I did.
So did you get an associate's?
I only stayed there just for one semester, just to earn, okay. Actually two, and just did a few credits and then finally transferred over to Western, where I finished my bachelor's degree, and I did major in psychology at that point.
Okay. So you got your bachelor's degree mm-hmm. from Western in mm-hmm. psychology.
Yeah.
I never knew that. This is wonderful.
Because that's not the one hanging on the wall here.
That's not the one that's hanging on the wall.
It's the grandmother of the degree
that's
hanging
right.
on the wall.
That's right. So then you went on and said, hey, yeah. I want this.
I did.
And so then you decided to mm-hmm. seek, you know, higher education even more.
I did.
And
yeah.
then explain that. How did that all come about?
The decision to follow the career. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. Getting your bachelor's in psychology, and at this point, I would say even any of the other related types of fields. What I didn't necessarily know, as much as I enjoy the subject matter and all of that, even the projects that I would do at times and what I would learn from those things, I didn't necessarily know what a job and a career would look like. At that level now. Yes, by this point, I did have some exposure to what actual clinical work would look like. I knew what a therapist was by that point. I knew what a psychologist was at that point. Not a lot, but I had some basic knowledge of what those jobs entailed. What I did not know is that a bachelor's degree would not necessarily right. qualify me and would not necessarily get me into doing that. I was not going to be Fraser Crane.
right.
I wasn't going to be Fraser Crane with just a bachelor's degree. So I was like, okay, so I do need to start thinking about graduate work at this point. I think I really started thinking more seriously about that probably my junior year.
Okay.
Like, okay, I'm going to need to get a master's. I need to get a master's. Okay. So.
So what would you tell our listeners, someone who's actually pursuing a psychology degree mm-hmm. undergrad?
Yeah.
What type of work did you find with a psychology degree?
Wow. So
with an undergrad.
With a bachelor's degree in psychology, it is because it's so broad and it's still very much entry level. You find yourself really going into case management roles, either at in private agencies. So nonprofit organizations oftentimes have work that is geared towards serving people. And so they're looking for people that have backgrounds in psychology or any, most of the liberal arts types of fields is where you can start to get that work experience to prepare yourself for advanced training and advanced positions. So nonprofit sector is one.
Okay.
I also found that there was a space within certain parts of the educational realm. So obviously not being a teacher, because that's a specialized position as well, but like after school programs and tutoring programs like that, where you didn't necessarily have to have specialized training, but you could just practice serving and managing and teaching people in a different type of way, skill building assistance with people. And then of course there's your community mental health based programs where they do hire at the bachelor's level. And again, that's probably some of the most intense training ground for someone looking to have a career in any kind of clinical therapeutic role. And I found myself working in pretty much all of those that I just named at different points in time. Yeah. Okay.
So what type of positions have you held?
Oh, goodness. So many. case management. And for a long time, I spent a good piece of my career in the child welfare space. And the child welfare space, and you probably know this as well, has a lot of opportunity in it to gain exposure to working with, you know, diverse populations, from servicing families to either help keep their families out of the court system or to assist them as they're going through the court system and even thereafter. Because if you've ever seen a family, or if you, you know, have ever had the misfortune of ever having to be involved in the child welfare court system, you need a lot of support, even as your family comes out of that. So I've been able to work in that space for a long time at each phase of that process, to serve families, to serve both the child who may have been separated from their family, right, to serve the parent as they are working to have their child reunited back with them, and then to help restore those families once they're back together. Yeah.
That has to be very, well, as you know, I worked in community mental health too.
Mm-hmm.
So it is definitely very rewarding. And I am so happy that I had that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And not that we're in private practice, do I forget, you know, community mental health, the importance of community mental health.
Yes.
Because the importance of quality care. So we have so many wonderful, you know, providers out there that really, really, really perform well in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always looking for opportunities to provide community service, even in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
Just always looking to extend and outside of the office here.
Yeah.
So that's great. So then you worked in community mental health for how long?
Well, community mental health was probably my shortest stint. I did it, but it was my shortest stint. And it didn't take me long being in the community mental health space to know just what it would require, and that it just really was not a fit for me, community mental health. Now, child welfare has its own challenges, but I felt more effective in that space than I did in community mental health space. Like you said, you want to know that you're giving quality services to these vulnerable people in your community who would not otherwise be able to access the proper mental health care that they need. But I just saw the focus being very heavily volume oriented versus quality.
Yeah.
And so it's a high burnout position, the case management role within community mental health, high burnout, high turnover. And as much as, even though there's so much to learn, right? Because you're going to get exposed to a multitude of different psychiatric diagnoses from the consumers that you serve. So you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a little bit about psychopharmacology because you're going to learn about all the different meds that your clients are prescribed, treatment planning and all that. You're going to learn all of that. You're also going to feel like, what am I doing? Yeah. Yeah. And that is not to disparage the profession. The profession, the merit Absolutely. Of the profession and the merit of the of what the entity that provides CMH services is purpose to do, that the merit is still there. However, it's still heavily volume focused. And sometimes when we're focused on volume, yeah. it compromises some other things too.
I would agree. Mm-hmm. I would be like, I remember the paperwork was
enough to keep up at night.
Yeah. It was never ending. Yeah. So like you said, you definitely want it to be balanced. I understand, mm-hmm. you know, the importance of paperwork, but you have also want to mm-hmm. invest the time in your clients mm-hmm. too. So that's very mm-hmm. important. So you're no longer in community mental health.
Mm-hmm. No, longer child welfare either.
No, okay, no longer. those are two different entities.
Yeah, two different entities. So okay. Child welfare mostly will involve or exclusively involve, you know, the state. When the state of Michigan comes in to assist with some sort of abuse, neglect, complaint, whether a child is removed from the home or not. Because even if they're not, even if a family receives complaints about potential abuse and neglect, it puts them on the radar. It puts them on the radar of the department. And so now having an obligation now to this family, the state usually tries to put in some sort of services to assist them. Because again, even if they can substantiate that that abuse has happened that warrants removal, because of different levels of it, they've identified some kind of risk. Mm-hmm. Some risk has been identified that now warrants some services. And the state of Michigan does have a pretty good menu of different services mm-hmm. available throughout the state of Michigan, mm-hmm. different programs to service families at different need levels. To help, again, either assist them through the court process, to help restore their families after they have reunited, or things to really prevent on the front end to help prevent, you know, a family from ever experiencing their child being removed. And there, it's a lot. There's a lot of families involved in each level of that. The state probably takes in hundreds of thousands of complaints every year. So that's a lot of families being touched.
That's right. Well, okay. What other, thanks for just, clarifying
that. Oh, yes,
that.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. I always kind of made them one mm-hmm. and the same, but they were mm-hmm. two separate.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that clarity. What other positions? I know, haven't you done some teaching too? An adjunct professor?
I did have an opportunity to simultaneously, I had three jobs at one time, being a therapist, being a manager with an agency, and being an adjunct professor. I really enjoyed that. I had an opportunity to teach, an entry-level home visiting course to prospective social workers at a local school. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed seeing young adults, and not only young adults, some non-traditional students, some who were already working in different parts of the workforce, who already had children, maybe already married, or this is a second career for them that they're embarking on. I really enjoyed teaching. I really did.
So are you still teaching?
No, no time for it right now. It is something that at a later point, I fully intend to pursue because I do think that, you know, once I feel like I've done what I've needed to do here in the private practice therapeutic space, that, okay, the next place I think I'm purposed to be is to teach those who want to do this.
Okay, that's like supervision, like graduating, mm-hmm. well, master level.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they were undergrad, but even still, in any respect, to be able to teach, you know, future professionals, you know, that's where I would for sure see the next part of my career being.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. So as a private practice owner, mm-hmm. As yourself, what type of clients do you see?
So I see a variety of types of clients right now, primarily individuals, adult, occasionally some adolescents, usually around age 15 and up, coming in for a variety of different life-related issues that are causing stress for them in some way. So individuals usually coming in for some issue that they're having difficulty adjusting to, or a very major thing happening in their life, grief, marital discord, relationship issues, discontent in their professional life, looking for redirection about where they would like their life to go, family challenges and family extended beyond maybe having children and spouses, but longstanding family conflict with parents and siblings, and just every measure of thing that probably touches their lives, mm-hmm. they're battling it in some way. So I'm seeing that right now as we speak, and I've seen that a lot over time in the men and women and in children that I've serviced.
Okay, that's good. What would you say? Would you say that, you know, historically, you know, people have always said that mm-hmm. in the African-American community mm-hmm. that we don't seek counseling. Mm-hmm. Would you say you've seen a change in that?
I think so. I think so, because I can say I have clients who, as I hear their stories and what all their life entailed up to this point, I know that they are probably doing this, meaning coming to seek help. They're probably doing it with not a lot of support behind them to do it. And I do serve predominantly an African-American client base. Now, it is diverse, but predominantly I do serve an African-American client base. And that's specifically because a lot of them wish to be treated by another African-American clinician because of all of the different concerns they've had about not just getting mental health therapy, but healthcare in general. Healthcare in general, our community they've had a conflicted relationship with, where they know they need to care for themselves, right? They know they need medical treatment, but they've been worried about whether or not they're going to get the proper treatment when they show up to the doctor's office, if they'll get the right diagnosis, if they'll get the intervention is going to work for them. Yeah. So I'm just seeing an all around distrust at times for the medical community in general, that even more so when we talked about, if you're talking to them about mental health, which is, you know, it's not an ache or a pain. It's not high blood pressure. It's not high blood sugar. It's just they feel bad and they're like, okay, well, I felt bad before. I'll be okay. But more and more, they're starting to realize, no, I don't think I want to live like this. But I also want to talk to somebody who might kind of understand what I'm dealing with. And so, yeah, they are looking for someone who looks like them.
Yeah.
To validate that, yes, you've made the right decision.
Yes. Yeah. So, I can echo that. Like I said, when I, you know, it always, you know, whenever anybody makes the decision mm-hmm. to, you know, come to counseling, because that's a huge decision mm-hmm. to make, because you are disclosing some intimate details about your life. So yeah. Anybody that comes, I am overjoyed and
yeah.
so happy to serve. But when I see our people, yes. to be honest with you, African Americans, I am, it touches me in a way that I can't, it's undescribable.
Yeah. We're happy to have them here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's just like, yeah. yes.
Yeah.
We're not up under that. What goes in this house stays in this house.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Let's, you know, get somebody that can help mm-hmm. me work through this. And yeah. if I'm, you know, I need to redefine some things or mm-hmm. redefine some relationships or what have yeah. you, let me have someone that can guide me along the way. Not tell me what to do, because that's not what we're here to do. Yeah. We're not here to tell you what to do, but we want to give you some kind of direction, some recommendations for consideration. That's what I like to
recommendation
say.
Recommendation for consideration.
That's it.
Perfect.
Right. Yes. That's it. That's it. So if you had someone, Ayana, as we wrap it up here, if you had someone that was contemplating, you know, should I do therapy or should not, how would you encourage that person to make that first step? What would you say to them if it was a family member?
Oh, goodness. If it was a family member,
a friend,
if they're thinking about making this first step to seek out help for themselves, I would ask them to ask themselves, how long have you been dealing with this? What do you imagine things to look like if you continue to have to live like this?
Yes.
I see you're right.
I'm like, yes. Those are such good questions. This is such good questions. It's just like.
Because it really does come down to that when we're talking about seeking out mental health services, and we're not necessarily dealing with some of the acute sorts of conditions. That's a whole other type of help that people often need, which often goes unaddressed just as well. But when we're talking about ways, help for managing just these daily life issues, or again, like I said, long-standing issues of conflict that you've had with loved ones, and you're like, where do we go from here? I still have to see you, and yet I have to get through this thing that happened between us. How long do you want to live like this? Do you see a path where this continues to be in the path and you can go forward with it? Do you see that as a possibility? Depending on how you answer that, then determines whether or not you need to seek out some help.
That's right.
So
that's lovely. That's really good. Ayana, I'm sure, I know you are booked and busy, but I would like for you to share with our listeners how they can reach you.
Yeah.
If they are looking for counseling, if you are taking new clients, if you can give your information, that would be great. And I'll put it, I'll actually kind of, you know, put it in the context of the podcast so that everyone can have it. But if you can let people know where they can reach you.
Absolutely. So my social media presence is yet growing because, you know, the introvert in me keeps me shy away from social media. But don't you worry, it will be establishing itself soon. Until then, you can find me listed on Psychology Today and Therapy for Black Girls. And I'm also here as one of the therapists at Nika Owens and Associates Counseling Office here in Dearborn. You can find me here and I would be happy to meet you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ayana, for just being a guest, for being a friend, for being a colleague, for all those things. Because again, your presence is welcome. It's needed in this space.
Oh,
and so I am honored that we have had this working relationship for as many years as we have, because it's nice when you can find people that you can trust. I come in this office and I feel good to see everybody that's here.
Yeah.
Right. So I say, oh, Yana's here. So it's just like you need that, you know, when you're, you know, dealing, when you're working with varying, you know, concerns that people may have, you know, granted that we love doing it, we were built to do this. It's nice to be able to, you know, from time to time, I need some advice, you know, for myself, right?
Happy it's
nice.
To give it.
Yeah, and it's nice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you so much.
It is my pleasure to do anything that Nika Owens asked me to do.
Well, thank you. And there's so many more projects that we have coming up, Ayana. I know this relationship, working relationship, friendship is so much more than what we can see. And that's why God still has us working together.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for joining today's episode. If you enjoyed the story time, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube. Leave us a review and share with your friends to help us reach more listeners. Stay tuned for more insightful stories. Until next time, take care and keep exploring new connections with us. Bye for now.